past. While not exhaustive, the HSE provided a list of 21 events recorded since January of 2019. This is part of its media search. These incidents were referenced at the Joint Health Committee meeting of the 18th of January last to support the case for introducing exclusion zone legislation. I'm joined on the line now by Sheila Quinlan of the Pro-Life Campaign. Sheila Quinlan, good afternoon to you, and you're very welcome indeed to the programme.
Good afternoon, Aidan.
Just for the benefit of listeners, Sheila Quinlan, can you just outline the background to all of this? Some people may not be up to speed with precisely what this is all about.
Well, absolutely. I mean, just to summarise it, there is legislation being promised that would address the so-called issue of pro-life people, so-called protesting, and I would use the word so-called protest outside spaces where abortions are being carried out, whether that would be maybe maternity hospitals or perhaps GP practices where the abortion pill is being administered. And I suppose pro-choice campaigners have been calling for this for some time, have been, you know, falsely stating that there's, you know, harassment and intimidation happening. We would argue quite the contrary, and I can get into that in a moment. But the government, as we have outlined on a number of occasions, the government is talking to and really listening to only one side of the argument or the conversation on this issue, and that is extreme pro-abortion campaigners like the National Women's Council, who are, you know, shouting loudly for these censorship zones, or as they're calling them, safe zones or exclusion zones, to be brought forward. So I suppose that's a very simplistic explanation of where we are today. And I suppose yes, it was revealed Deputy Michael Collins, in reply to a parliamentary question, the HSE provided a list of 21 events, as they call them, throughout the country. They essentially did a media call, so they searched social media, etc., for evidence of any, you know, protests, as they so called them. But I think what this has shown, what's really interesting about this, from our perspective and from your listeners' perspective, it really does show how this is, I would use the word, completely fake story, completely fake news, and really is, you know, at best, a complete waste of, you know, of taxpayers' money, of parliamentary and government time. What it has shown is that there is absolutely no evidence of harassment and intimidation, and this is not evidence-based legislation, and there is absolutely no call for this, because there is.
But can I just stop you there, Sheila? When you say there's no evidence of harassment or intimidation, harassment and intimidation can be created merely by the presence of people. And isn't this, to a large extent, about a balancing of rights? On the one hand, the right of people like yourself to protest against legislation, but on the other hand, the right of individuals to actually benefit, as they would see it, from the same legislation. So, two points there. Number one, the presence of people like you in those situations could well be interpreted by people as constituting intimidation and harassment. And on the other hand, the right of women in a crisis pregnancy to avail of themselves of legislation which has been enacted by Parliament and which is on the statute books and which is there for everyone who wants to make use of this particular piece of legislation.
Well, there's a number of points there, Aidan. First of all, if there was actual evidence of harassment or intimidation, well, first of all, that is currently covered under the laws that are in Ireland, and that would be against the law. the Commissioner, the Garda Commissioner back in 2019, Commissioner Harris at the time, stated the fact that he was very happy with the existing laws that were in place. So there are laws already in place that which you would make any sort of act like that illegal. But that said, if there were actual examples of harassment or intimidation, you could be sure that they would be, you know, the front news story the following day. But I suppose the second part of it is, you know, we're talking about, you know, basic rights to freedom of expression and to peacefully assemble. And I mean, this is a grave precedent that we would be setting here by introducing laws that would specifically target a certain number of people in our country, pro-life people. And also, I suppose, it's really important agency in context. I mean, obviously, I'm very involved with the pro-life movement in Ireland. And, you know, the reality is you're talking about a very, very small number of people. And to put it into context, and they had no context in terms of their listing of incidents, so-called incidents. That could be one person, it could be two. When is that? Is it, you know, at a weekend, when a GP practice is not open? There is a lot of factors there that are not actually teased out. And really, you know, what we're talking about here, and it's a very, very clever strategy, like in the context of the wider conversation and the wider debate around the abortion laws in Ireland, this should not be what we're talking about. What we should be talking about is the absolute adverse effects that the abortion laws have had on Ireland. We should be talking about the three-year review and the fact that, you know, that abortion in Ireland is really, the conversation is really from one perspective and one perspective only. And really, it's very, very clever strategy from pro-choice and pro-abortion campaigners, really, to demonise pro-life people and calling for laws which are totally unnecessary. A complete, as I said at the outset, a complete waste of government resources and taxpayers' money at best, maybe.
But on the other hand, Sheila Quinlan, You make the point that the legislation had an adverse impact on this country, but you don't get the impression that people other than yourselves take that view. There's no evidence whatsoever of a groundswell of support for essentially revisiting the issue once again.
Well, you could be right there in many respects. I suppose, you know, people are very, very busy. You know, there are a lot of challenges in Ireland today. So your programme has highlighted, you know, we're in a cost of living crisis and we have a housing crisis. There are many issues that people have in day-to-day lives and, you know, the issue of abortion and abortion laws in Ireland and the number of abortions in Ireland may not be at the forefront of their minds on a daily basis, and you know we wouldn't expect otherwise. And I mean, we're realistic in the pro-life campaign. We know that we are going to have to campaign long and hard before we may be able to return to full protection for the unborn in this country. At the same time, you know, it is only right that we continue to hold the government to account and call for, you know, a real and honest debate around the abortion laws in Ireland. Currently, in conversation, we are really only hearing, you know, one side of the conversation. There is very little conversation around common ground issues that maybe we should all be able to agree on, which is, you know, the fact that how do we find ways to reduce the abortion numbers in Ireland. Since the abortion law has come into effect in Ireland, Ireland's abortion rate has actually soared. and we've had over 20,000 abortions in Ireland, and yet the government isn't talking about that. We're on the cusp of the of getting the results of the 3-year review that the government has been carrying out. And myself and others have been on this program before. Recently, they've been talking about the fact that, you know, we have absolutely grave concerns around the entire process of the 3-year review, and the fact that the government have been meeting with and listening to pro-abortion, extreme pro-abortion campaigners only. And we would have great concerns that they are, you know, stepping towards implementing some of their very extreme abortion laws. And yet, no conversations around positive alternatives to abortion. And we know that, for instance, you know, recent research that was carried out by Amorg showed that 89% of people supported women being given, you know, full information with regard to alternatives to abortion. At the moment, it would seem that all roads lead to abortion only. And very, very sadly, we had, I don't know if some of your listeners probably saw it, we had the master of the Rotunda, Professor Virgil Malone, come out recently and state that 95% of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome in the womb are being aborted, those people travelling to the UK. So really, you know, what we're seeing here in a very, very short space of time really is a cultural shift in Ireland. Sadly, this was much of what we were really, really worried about during the referendum. And I think it's very important as well, Aidan, to point out that, you know, in the context of all of this, the fact that the government is really just listening to Ireland's pro-choice, Ireland's pro-abortion campaigners, who really, you know, no number is too high, they're ignoring two large sections of society, of the voting public. They're ignoring the 1 in 3 people who voted no in the referendum. But I would also argue that they're ignoring a lot of people who voted yes, on the premise that, you know, that we were going to have lots of fail-safes in place, and that abortion was going to be, as Leo Bradford at the time said, it was going to be a rare entity in Ireland. And sadly, it is anything but.
Can I stop you there again, though, just in relation to that statistic? And I was reading about that, where 95% of pregnant women with Down syndrome, children in the womb, opted for an abortion, either in this country or elsewhere. But doesn't that of itself indicate the thinking of many, many people who find themselves in this situation? And I'm just wondering, do you regard that as a cultural shift, or simply a woman, and I presume in consultation with her partner, making a decision to avail of domestic legislation, whereas in the past it would have required travelling to Liverpool or London or wherever?
First of all, I would say that many of them are actually still travelling abroad for those procedures. But what I would say is it's an indication absolutely of a cultural shift, both, you know, in terms of the expectant mum making that decision, but also, you know, a shift as well in doctors and nurses. And we know, and we have talked about before, the reality that when abortion becomes legalised in a country, there is that cultural shift, and how the pressure that, and we talked about this a lot during the referendum, about when we looked at the UK and talking to families and people who had gone ahead with their pregnancy, and organisations like Don't Sting Us Out, who campaign for the rights of babies with Down syndrome in the womb, babies that can be aborted right up to birth, by the way, in Britain. Those parents talk about the fact that they were asked repeatedly at every appointment, at every scan, you know, were they terminating the pregnancy? And that sort of attitude, and I suppose the overall attitude that society has when you have an entrenched position on abortion and it's established in the country. And the reality is that the vast majority of babies in the UK who are diagnosed with Down syndrome are aborted. And that has a knock-on effect with doctors and with nurses. And Ireland, is sadly based on what Professor Malone is stating, indicates the same. But really, this is what abortion does when it becomes legal in a country. It's extremely damaging. It really does change the culture of a country. I spoke to somebody very recently who was having their first pregnancy, their first baby, delighted but unexpected, but very much wanted, and went into the GP, and the GP asked them, "Are you surprised?" And they said, "Oh gosh, yes." And the very first thing that the GP said to them was, "Well, you know, you have options." I thought that was very, very telling. This person had absolutely no intention of having an abortion, yet that was the go-to position of the GP. It was one of the first things that was mentioned. And we do know as well that, if a woman is facing an unplanned pregnancy and she is in any way conflicted and Googles, help regarding abortion in Ireland, she is directed to the taxpayer-funded government helpline, which is My Option. And we also know that recent research carried out by a group of students highlighted the fact that My Option takes the position of defaulting to recommending that if in doubt, if a woman facing an unplanned pregnancy is unsure, to at least make an appointment with their GP who would provide the abortion pill.
Sheila Quinlan, I'm sorry to cut across you. I'm out of time. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this afternoon, and I expect we'll be talking to you again in relation to that three-year review, which is due out very shortly. But for the moment, Sheila Quinlan from the Pro-Life Campaign, many thanks indeed for joining us on the programme this afternoon. That brings the time to...